Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed. From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. Now it's time for a Spotlight Star Wars with your host, Ken Knapsack.
Hey friends, let's go back to 1999. That's right. It's the 149th edition of Spotlight Star Wars, and we're going to go back to May of 1999. A little picture called The Phantom Menace coming out in theaters. And I love looking back at the movie. I love going back and watching. I'm actually watching Phantom Menace to prepare for an upcoming Star Wars Ranked episode, which Justin and I will be putting out about our favorite lines. And it's just a fun movie to revisit. But what's also fun is to see certain things and go, yeah, I remember really not liking that, or remember that not being to my expectations, or at the time I thought standards as a Star Wars fan, which is just completely unfair to the picture. But we've all been on a journey with that. We all have been on a journey with Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace. Even if you saw it at 7, 8, 9 years of age back in 1999. Maybe you revisit it a little bit later on and maybe it doesn't explode off the screen as much as it did. Maybe there's something there that you have to dig a little deeper to find out. I really contend that we all have had a wonderful, at times challenging, but at the end of the day, because it's Star Wars, fun journey with the Phantom Menace. And I thought, when I got a hold of this TV guide that I'm flipping through, a listener supporter, DJ Oldboy is his screen name, sent this TV guide over to our offices at the Good People Association, the production company and a YouTube channel that I do some work with nearby, with Josh McCuga, Mark Riley. We have a lot of fun. We got our Kickstarter going with Futility, the actual game of living board game. Support it if you want. But DJ Oldboy always sends us fun little things. Little Sleepless in Seattle soundtrack CD, Jean-Claude Van Damme movie posters, like stuff like that. And this showed up. This number two in our four-part collector set this week, TV guide for May 15th through the 21st in 1999, special Star Wars issue. On the cover, we got Phantom, the Phantom Menace hero, I guess you could say, Liam Neeson. Then you got two battle droids, all those battle droids. Then you got this evil-looking, kind of yellow, angry-eyed, horn-having baddie. Got to be a Sith, right? Got to be the main bad of the entire series. Man, look at that. He's on the cover of TV Guide. And I just decided, wouldn't it be fun to go back and read every word written leading up to the release of this movie? And go back to, what did we think? What were our expectations? And I'm kind of speaking directly to my generation older. But again, even if you're seven and you're seeing a trailer, you're going to have some expectations about it. And I've always said, I've never backed off the fact that I love the two main Phantom Menace trailers. Me and Mark Ellis will talk about them often, about how often, randomly, we'll just put them on YouTube in hotel rooms while we're doing comedy or just Home Alone and you want to watch a Star Wars trailer. I love those trailers, even though I remember watching those trailers and having just a different story in my mind than the one we actually got. And I don't think we as an audience could help that. This is the expectations for this movie. I don't know if we'll ever see again. And I'm including Force Awakens. The hype was real for The Force Awakens, and the hype was big. And I don't think we'll ever feel that again. I mean, it's right up there. But 1999, we didn't think we're going to see another Star Wars movie. 2015, it was a big surprise in 2012. It was headline news for a reason. But it wasn't entirely out of the realm of possibilities with what Disney was doing. Some of those conversations were probably, you were having them in bars about what if they make more Star Wars films. Crazy as it may seem, there was a slight chance that it happened, and it all kind of made sense, whether you love the Disney sale or not. But that day, it all kind of made sense. But May of 1999, man, that didn't make sense to me. I couldn't believe it, and we've kind of been ready for this. The rumors swirling around 1994 range, some of those early movie magazines that I have read here on Spotlight Star Wars. I love tracking the hype, but also in tracking the hype, I think it's fair to look back and say, hey, there was some massive disappointments and some misunderstandings and some confusions. But I wanted to go back with what was said and what was written about The Phantom Menace in this TV guide and just see where we were. And also, quite frankly, and I'm looking again at myself, not looking at you, looking at myself, quite frankly, see what I may have missed in reading the press for The Phantom Menace. Maybe there was some coded words, some clues of what was to come, and we just weren't paying attention. These are TV guide articles. They're not tremendously deep. They're, paid promotional fluff pieces, quite frankly, but there's some good stuff in these. And quite frankly, when we get to the Jake Lloyd stuff, some dark things that we already saw what was happening. We just didn't seem to care. We didn't seem to choose a better path once the movie came out, but let's get to that in a second. The first thing you see, and I'm not going, these aren't overt clues that where George was like, yeah, this is a lot of politics and Trade Federation shenanigans, get ready. Nah, but there was a lot of George saying, I am making my story, and I am making the movies I want to make, and, that was clue enough. There is some interesting stuff in page 19, if you're following along. I don't know who's following along. George already in 1999 addressing the internet. And now that's not necessarily about the movie and what was to come, but also just gives you a lay of the land of how they talked in the TV Guide of casting of the forthcoming Phantom sequels. Funny they're calling it that. Has not begun. Lucas says, despite internet rumors to the contrary, the director discounts speculation that Joshua Jackson of Dawson's Creek has been signed for a role. Lucas says, I've just started to write the next screenplay. I haven't even hired a casting director yet, and I won't start casting until the fall, Lucas says, chuckling and adding that until recently, 80 to 85% of everything on the internet about the movie was false. Which use of the phrase until recently, because I do remember, wasn't there one of the scripts, maybe one copy did get out. Interesting. This is 1999. So this is a different time. This is still technically the 90s that we're watching this picture in. And yeah, I think I was dialing up my internet back then and the chat rooms and everything. Everything was already getting scary. We just didn't think about it. And this was where you were having those conversations. So did you hear that Joshua Jackson, Dawson's Creek, was it Pacey, right? I don't want to wait for my life. Never mind. You kind of believed it. And you know, then you go back and looking at some things were true. Maybe Leo DiCaprio getting some consideration, all those kind of things. But we just kind of believed it. And that we didn't know what was forthcoming. In terms of the internet and what it would do to the Star Wars conversation. We had a good idea already, but it just was part of the fun, part of the experience. I remember getting those CD-ROMs of the Phantom Menace, some special material with the first release of the VHS box set. Man, put in those CD-ROMs and get computer information on Star Wars. Lucas does talk, interesting though, he does talk about some parenting advice, which has echoes in Star Wars stories to come and has echoes with what we are going to get with The Phantom Menace. He talked about his kids at this time. Jet was 6, Katie was 11, Amanda was 18. Of course, we all know the story. He adopted them after and all around Return of the Jedi with Amanda and went out and raised his kids, which is one of the reasons he was kind of away. And even says in this interview, I didn't really necessarily quit as a director. Everyone says I don't like directing and I quit it. No, I like it. I had to do other things. I had to produce Star Wars and then I had to raise a family. Sorry. But he says this, he talks about his oldest daughter being 18 and things have changed. And he says, once they reach the middle of the teenage years, you pretty much have to let them loose and watch more of what they want to do. Lucas says, even the creator of the universe, it seems, is no match for a teenage daughter. The article ends. That's the great Kenneth Turan, who is still around. You see him on Twitter every now and then, film critic here in LA. So I actually love that. That at some point you have to let them go. And realizing that as he was writing the story of a young kid, and he's got, again, Jet is 6 at this time, but as he's putting this movie together, Amanda, his daughter's in those teenage years. I think of Ahsoka right away. I think of even some of the lessons we've seen with Ahsoka and Anakin in the Clone Wars about just kind of have to trust and trust that your training and everything you've put into Ahsoka as a Padawan in terms of guidance and mentorship and skills, that she'll know what to do. And at some point, that's what you have to let happen. I think of Sula Quine in The Bad Batch. Just saying, hey, kids are going to get hurt. That's just what's going to happen. You got to be there after that. You can't prevent all of that. And how Lucas is taking that and that idea of attachment, that idea of a negative attachment and fear of letting go and putting that into The Phantom Menace. And I go right to the Shmi stuff. Even though, as I was starting to say, he's writing the story about Anakin and he's got a 6-year-old son, I wonder how much he's looking at Shmi and himself and just a parent and what that means. And I've never really thought about it directly in those terms. We talk about Shmi a lot. We think there's great lessons in Shmi Skywalker, powerful lessons that connect to all of Star Wars. And this is one of the things in my ongoing and ever-growing relationship with the Phantom Menace, Shmi and Pernilla August as Shmi Skywalker just becomes more important to the Star Wars story to me. So that actually kind of makes sense that it would be aligned with some of the lessons George felt he learned or was still learning as a parent, and also then translating that a little bit later on to being a master. So, again, not saying that's plot prediction, not saying that we couldn't have predicted that one, but speaking from experience, and I don't know where you were, if you were of age to remember your experience going into The Phantom Menace. But I've talked about this as it relates to, like, Revenge of the Sith. Young Anakin, the boy who would be Vader, and that poster comes out, that great poster of Anakin and the shadow being cast on the Tatooine hut there that's Vader. It's just a classic photo, right? We all love that one. I just went in. My expectations weren't going to be about this, about parenting advice or letting go and being not being afraid or not being afraid to be afraid, but letting go of those things that control you and those fears and what those lead. I didn't expect that lesson. And when you hear Yoda in the trailer talk about fear leads to anger, leads to hate, leads to suffering, you hear that. That just sounds like great Jedi wisdom. And that sounds like, yeah, you know, hate's not good. And how George is really always just doubling down on what leads to anger, what leads to the next choice being hate, which, of course, will lead to suffering of all kinds. And sometimes I, again, speaking of me, just took it in one particular direction and took it a little bit on the surface. And so when I hear this and I hear, yes, we're talking about Lucas and his kids, but that's where his mind was at this time when he's putting together this movie. And yes, he's telling this tale for a new generation. Yes, he's writing floppy-eared comedy characters and doing all that. But this is the stuff that might have been at the core that I was not ready for when I slid into my seat at the Pacific Theaters in Winnetka, California, about a week after this TV guide came out. Great stuff there from George. But, you know, without a doubt, some of the challenges still remain in The Phantom Menace, even for me, around the dialogue, the delivery of the dialogue. I understand what George was trying to do. I understand how he kind of defends it, particularly in the stuff around Attack of the Clones. And I accept it. I think that I get what the creator is saying. I put a capital T to capital C on the creator. I wouldn't argue with him about that. Yes, the dialogue is supposed to be a little stiff, a little different from a different era. I get all that, but I don't think we, you know. And look, some of the original trilogy dialogue is still you know, famously stiff, particularly Jedi, particularly New Hope. I think Empire skates that a little bit. So, again, I was sitting down in that theater, and I remember my heart sinking a little bit early on with some of the dialogue in 1999 and some of the stuff with Natalie Portman. Well, here you go on page 22 of this interview with Natalie Portman. She talks about the dialogue being a bit rough. She says nothing. The article says nothing could prepare Portman for The Phantom Menace. It had just talked about her previous work, Mars Attacks, Heat, Beautiful Girls, and then, of course, appearing on stage in the Anne Frank play as well. She says, she explains, Portman, most of us had worked on pretty heavy dramatic stuff, very wordy movies with a lot of dialogue. So we thought Phantom Menace would be a breeze, but it wasn't. It was much harder than any of us expected. And she's talking about Liam Neeson, Ewan McGregor, Ahmed Best, all these very talented people and very talented performers with a very talented director. And George clearly had a very specific way he was going to approach him. And I don't think we can deny that. Ewan McGregor has already talked about it with some of the Kenobi. I wouldn't even say Kenobi Press, but just some of the stuff that's come on out. So again, I read this article in TV Guide. I think I don't connect it back to, and I'm not, again, not, this isn't my fault, but not your fault either. But I don't connect it back to all the stuff that Carrie Fisher's talked about of, you know, George, you can write this, but you can't say it. Harrison Ford saying, George, you can write this, you can't say it. Mark Hamill remembering his audition monologue, which is just wonderfully clunky and sci-fi and stiff at times there. None of that's in my head. I grew up with that. I grew up with all of the Star Wars dialogue. But I didn't read this and think of that. I just thought, nah, brand new era, late 90s acting style, a little bit different than the early 80s. We got it. So when the dialogue showed up, yeah, it was a little confusing at the time. And it doesn't sit in a bad way with me now, but in just watching Phantom Menace today, and I love the moment where Amidala reveals her true self and goes to one knee in front of Boss Nass to humble herself and humble the people in Naboo and ask for help. I love that moment. I love that moment for what that means for the Star Wars story, for what it means for the character of Amidala. It's still you know, you can still see it for what it is. It's a chunky, clunky piece of dialogue that Natalie Portman does her best with. And who knows how many takes she got. George maybe wanted to move on and just edit up the performance in post. So that's another little clue. But great stuff in here from Natalie Portman talking about where she was in her career on the cusp of more fame. And without a doubt, this was going to bring her more fame. And how she didn't feel she wasn't going to let it change her. And that's what I think Natalie Portman, when you look at her life and you look at her career, I think she's stayed pretty strong to herself. She has done the things she's wanted to have done as an actor and said the things she wants to say as an actor and an activist and now a mother, a parent, a leader. And she there's some great interviews of Natalie Portman around the time of Revenge of Sith talking about the character, what the character means to her. And it's pretty right on stuff. So Harvard was still, I think, in the future, or she was going to Harvard around this time. I think she's still, obviously, at the time of this movie coming out, she's really young. And some of the interview questions they asked her are those kind of like cheeky, do you got a boyfriend questions, which are, you know, unfortunate. But then they do lead to a great, you know, Saturday Night Live video sketch that went viral a little bit later on. Same type of vibe there. And there, once again, too, Natalie Portman doing what Natalie Portman wants to do. But all that dialogue, all the rough dialogue that was to come, I wasn't stopping. And nor were you. I doubt any of you were stopping to think, man, we're going to get some rough dialogue in episode one. Ewan McGregor has some good stuff in here. Nothing that would talk. He's pretty excited about the movie. Nothing that would give you, no talking that would give you any kind of weird clues or weird or foreshadowing of some of the issues to come, except for he does have some great stuff about Star Wars, the big movies and the small movies and fame and art. And this is someone already by the time he's cast, he's considered an edgy independent star. Trainspotting, Velvet Goldmine, which doesn't get talked as much as Trainspotting. He had said infamously that he would never taint his soul with crap like Independence Day. But he says here in this interview, Star Wars as well, Star Wars. So he was on board, and that makes, when I hear that, it makes just makes all the sense that he'd be chomping at the bit to come back and get another shot with Obi-Wan Kenobi. And now maybe the dialogue will be a little different. No respect, no disrespect to George, of course, there. So interesting stuff. Again, also to just, as a Star Wars fan, to go back and think, here we are in 2021, coming up on 2022, waiting for an Obi-Wan Kenobi series. That kind of blows my mind, doesn't it? Doesn't it? All right, on that note, I hope you're having fun taking this journey with me. This is Spotlight Star Wars is truly just this monologue. I'm thinking aloud here. I'm trying to put myself back in the place I was in 1999 and trying to analyze a little bit of why, when I walked out of that theater, it didn't feel right, and it didn't. No prequelist love that I can spout now will change the fact that on that warm day in 1999, sitting outside in the parking lot with my friends as we all tried to process what we had just seen, we didn't allow ourselves to process it. It took a while, at least for me. Over around the corner, some nine-year-olds having a great time. They process it quite well. So I love analyzing why. I love analyzing what went wrong in my heart and how I got to where I am now. I was so positive about these films. So anyways, we're going to take a quick break. And on the other side, we're going to get a little serious with what happened with Jake Lloyd and then wrap up our conversation about Phantom Menace back in 1999. Stick around to Spotlight Star Wars.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
All right, we're back here on Spotlight Star Wars. I'm going through the TV guide. Oh, it's been fun to actually just thumb through the rest of the TV guide. And remember, the TV guide, quite frankly, was appointment reading, wasn't it? Cheers and jeers. You got to find out, you know, who's being cheered and jeered this week. Oh, my gosh. I just accidentally flipped to a CBS advertisement for Prequel Monday. May the farce be with you. King of Queens. Everybody loves Raymond Becker. Craig Kilborn is hosting it. Holy moly. I forgot. That was a random flip to that page. And holy, we were all excited for Star Wars. And being excited for Star Wars, I'm looking at this TV guide. I'm trying to see what was there. What was there? Should I have been a little more ready for the impact of the film? And should I have been listening to the clues, not just with plot, but with themes and what was going to be happening around this movie? I just was happy to see my pew, pew, pew Star Wars saga back in theaters. So I was 22 when this movie came out. I was no way I could predict everything good and bad that was going to happen from this. And quite frankly, coming out of the theater, no way I could have predicted that where I'd be right now as a fan. Someone who absolutely just enjoys the hell out of The Phantom Menace. One of the things I have come to really love about The Phantom Menace in the last couple of years as we've analyzed the importance of Qui-Gon and his advice and Qui-Gon and his purpose and goals in the film, Shmi and her role, is the stuff with Anakin. And look, I don't mind a little yippee joke or a little wizard joke. I really don't. I get it. It's a fun, loving reference. But I like a lot of the stuff. I think Jake hits some big moments with his mom and Qui-Gon and Jar Jar around the dinner table and Padme there as well. I think he hits some of those moments more than he probably hits the Master Qui-Gon, what are midichlorians, sir, line, or the yippies or the wizards. He hits some of those notes, and he's a young kid with a director who's more worried about perhaps other things going around than another take on that dialogue. And then in the beginning documentary, you see George address that, hey, there's probably some other actors I could have gone with here that would have maybe hit the marks a little better, been a little bit more prepared. Maybe we save some money, save some time, save some shots. But I like what Jake brings to the table. Paraphrasing George at this point. And all said and done in the end, I think if you go back with a different eye and a different maybe peace in your soul as a Star Wars fan, you see what George was talking about. Number one, I think he just looks like a Skywalker, number one, but he's got energy. He's got a little glint in his eye. He's got something there. And the Jake Lloyd article in this thing, there's two things that stand out. One, we'll start with the bad stuff. Man, they're pretty honest that already, before this movie had come out, that there was already a lot of heat. A lot of heat from the fandom coming towards Jake Lloyd. The article reads, "Landing the much-coveted role of young Anakin Skywalker comes at a price. These days, the Lloyds are dealing with rumors that Jake's Vader is a dud, that some of his scenes had to be reshot, and that on the set he was nicknamed Mannequin Skywalker because his performance was so stiff." Well, first of all, I would argue there's a lot of stiff performances in The Phantom Menace, perhaps again by design. Look, there's no denying, you probably get what leaked out. You probably know, and who knows where the sources are and if they're early internet movie sleuths and reporters. I'm not dumb. I see why someone may have thought that. And at the time, maybe why they would have said that. But it's nothing short of tragic to read this now. At the week the movie came out, and to know what ends up and has happened with Jake Lloyd and his life and his struggles and his relationship with Star Wars and the things he's gone through and the mental health battles and legal troubles, all the things that at times you could consider it a worst case scenario. And Jake and Ahmed Best took the brunt of everything that was going to come after here in May of 1999. And we have done a great job, I think, as a fandom to look at Ahmed Best and not just welcome him back. He wasn't owed that from us. You know, he didn't deserve, if he wanted to come back, he had every right to come back. He came back when it was the right time. But I do think, especially Celebration Chicago 2019, I think we were ready for it and we viewed it. And I think we as a fandom got downright defensive about Ahmed Best, especially when he came clean with some of the struggles he had gone through with his very life in the balance, his career destroyed, all for the sake of Jar Jar jokes, which are, you know, hey, look, Jar Jar steps in the poopy. We get it. If that's all you got about Jar Jar, you know, I don't want to have the conversation with you anymore. I think Joseph and I have done a really good job on Clone Wars Report, digging into some of the great Jar Jar moments that are there, even more moments that challenged me. And there are Jar Jar moments in The Phantom Menace that certainly challenge me as a Star Wars fan. Absolutely. But we've done a great job of 20 years gone, looking back, looking what Ahmed did for just the technical side. All the credit, rightfully so in a lot of ways, given to Andy Serkis for performance capture and motion capture performances. But do not overlook Ahmed Best. And I think we as a Star Wars fandom really, again, get defensive and won't let anyone else forget that anymore. Do not forget Ahmed. Do not forget what they did for the technical side of that. And do not forget what he brought to the role. I even get defensive about that. I understand and love the expansion of Gungan characters to have different accents and speak. And I get a lot of the controversy and the racist overtones that people say are there. I totally get it. And that's not wrong. But also, Ahmed put a lot of himself into that role, put a lot of his own choices into what was going on there. So I like that we can have the nuanced conversations. We can say, hey, we can be a little better about how this character sounds. And believe me, Phantom Menace has some challenges. But we can also look with a lot of love, warmth, and gratitude towards Ahmed Best. I hope and pray, and I gotta believe that one day, when he's ready, when his family says, hey, yeah, we're in a good spot. He's in a better spot. That Jake Lloyd can be welcomed back. And again, if he's never steps foot at a Star Wars convention or a Star Wars related interview, who's going to blame him? Who's going to blame him? But again, if a 22-year-old soul like me, in a 45-year-old body, can look back and look at Phantom Menace and see Jake Lloyd's performance in a brand new line, in a different line, and sift through some awkward moments here and there and find the heart of this young character, a character that we, want to understand more, want to understand what went wrong, and want to understand the important lessons there that George has for the character in the fall of Anakin Skywalker. If we could do that, man, if I can do that, because I sat in the theater and going, and then he says wizard, and then he says, now this is pod racing. what we all thought was maybe harmful jabs, surface level criticism, nearly led to the complete destruction of this person's life. And without a doubt, his career. He's, before this, Jingle All the Way, he's on ER. He was in a movie with Marissa Tomei, Unhook the Stars. He's working. He's a young kid working, and there's dangers in that. I'm out here in L.A. The acting industry is tough for everyone. It breaks you down at any point. The entertainment overall, but particularly acting. You're so just, it's so about putting yourself out there daily, auditions, the research, the taking the chances and working full time 365 days a year for what you hope is one break. And that's tough on adults. 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kid at the time of this interview going through that already. And then he becomes the face of failure for this franchise. We just didn't know. We should have. We should have been listening to interviews like this. If I'm reading this at 22, and I'm reading what his mom and dad, Lisa and Bill, are saying about what's going on to this 10-year-old at this time. They go on to say, after a source, the article talks about a source saying, that's bunk. His scenes with Natalie Portman, his scene with his nemesis, a computer-generated character named Sebulba, are among the best. Jake gets it, says the source. He gets the whole digital thing. Then the article said, still the sniping stunned his parents. It really hurts, says Lisa. It is a personal attack on a 10-year-old little boy. George was really upset, quite honestly. Bill and I are really mad. But Jake took it better than we did. He said, it was only one person's opinion. I know I did a good job. Besides, you guys love me. It doesn't matter. And I hope those words could still be roaming around and found inside the soul of Jake Lloyd. I really mean it. I really do. I don't know. Again, if he never wants to step back, he never steps back. But I read this, and I have anger. I also have slight shame as a Star Wars fan I won't go as far as say we let this happen, but I was part of this. I was part of this. I didn't seek him out on Friendster or MySpace or Twitter and say things to him, and I wasn't a host of a podcast then. But I had these conversations, my friend. I misunderstood a lot of what George was trying to do with Anakin. I remember saying, they should have just started it with teenage Anakin, prequel Anakin. That should have been it. Not the kid Anakin. You know what I mean by prequel Anakin. But like, teenage Anakin, Attack of the Clones. Start it there. In this article, they talk about how George, and this is from Jake Lloyd himself, George wanted me to play him as a loving character. I don't think of him as the evil monster of the first three films. And that's what George was putting in there. That's absolutely what George Lucas was putting in there. I wanted a cool, soon-to-be evil Vader. My view of Darth Vader in the prequels for a long time was he should have choked and destroyed and taken the power. That should have been how he fell. And we've talked about it a lot, and I've talked about it right here in Spotlight Star Wars. That was never the point. That wasn't the point when it was all said and done on the original trilogy. And I love that George decided, no, I need to really drive this home, particularly in Revenge of the Sith. But back here in the beginning, you saw the poster. We all saw the poster. Young Anakin, the shadow. The shadow was Vader. Ooh, we needed dark and we needed gritty. But George was telling the story of a loving child. A smile and a song in this kid's heart who just wanted to help the galaxy, who just wanted to do right, who just wanted to help his mom. He just couldn't get over that attachment. He just couldn't get over those fears. And by the time he gets to Coruscant, the cracks are already starting to show. And the Jedi are driving it home. What, do you miss your mom? What, are you cold? Come on, kid. We don't even want to train you. What are you doing here? A ship, a cup, a ship, a speeder? Yay, great. No training for you. Sorry you miss your mom. That's the story George was telling. Jake's got it right there. He's saying it right there. Did he play that? Did he play that correctly? George wanted me to play him as a loving character. I think he did. Much like Ahmed Best coming back to Star Wars Celebration and getting a nice hearty round of applause, I pray for the day Jake Lloyd can be in the right spot in his life, the right spot in his life, that he cannot just return to a celebration stage and wave, but that he can feel that the words he said here back in 1999, that I know I did a good job. Besides, you guys love me. It doesn't matter. I hope those words can still be found in his heart. And I hope one day can be found for Star Wars and for the Phantom Menace. That was the biggest takeaway I had from this article. Final one was The Knight. Liam Neeson joins the Force. No questions asked. Very interesting. And this has come up in other interviews. But this interview here, written by David Gritton, talks about how Liam Neeson met with George and then accepted the role right then and there without even reading the script. And you can make a joke about that, right? Did he see the stiff dialogue coming? Would he have changed his mind? Would he have still done it? I think he still would have done it. I think anyone would have done it. Reading a script and then going out and shooting the movie and seeing the final product, entirely different, right? Entirely different. He talks about how in 1977 he was connected to Star Wars, seeing Star Wars in Belfast, Northern Ireland, on a day when the violence was shaking the city. There were bombs going off all over the city. You could hear them during the film. By rights, no one should have been there or interested in the movie, but that place was packed. That's the power of Star Wars back in 77 and for all time. Very interesting, talking about what was forthcoming. So he's the Jedi Knight. This article talks about he's the Knight. It has two shots there. It has Liam on Naboo, lightsaber out shortly before they run into Darth Maul. Then has a shot on Tatooine, that mini duel with Maul and Qui-Gon. A lot of us were getting ready for that, right? And the inset reads, Qui-Gon duels with the evil Darth Maul. Oh, man, so exciting. So exciting. But he says this. I love it. He says, Neeson likens a Jedi to marshals in the Old West. I'm a Jedi Knight who stands for a code of ethics and morals that are fast disappearing in the world George has created. It goes on to talk about, this is his point. The article, well written, well put together by David Gritton, wherever you are, you did a great job. But there's that little line there. I'm a Jedi Knight who stands for a code of ethics and morals that are fast disappearing in the world George has created. Great. And then it goes into fighting. Neeson talks about it's the best costume I've ever had. It looks regal, but it was designed with a lot of physical activity in mind, activities such as wielding a lightsaber. Whoa, there's a Star Wars fan. I'm excited. We got the picture of him fighting this Maul character. He says, I've done a few sword fight films before. I've always kept fit, but hey, this is different. It just gets you excited, man. It just gets you excited because he's a Jedi, and he's got to have that lightsaber out, and he's got to be fighting. And this is perhaps the biggest expectation I took into this film, and perhaps into the prequels. Liam Neeson talking about, no, there's a code of ethics and the morals in this world, they're disappearing. And here I am, I'm trying to hold on to them. We just couldn't imagine that it was the Jedi Order that was also seeing some of this decay. That George was trying to talk about the rise of Palpatine wasn't all about Sith lightning. It was about trade disputes, blockades, policy, bureaucracy, politics, George was getting ready to tell us the story of how a loving boy got caught up in all of that and how the Jedi themselves got caught in the fall. But we, and I do mean me, were reading this article and saying, yeah, lightsaber fights. So there you go. That's my journey back to 1999 in this wonderful TV Guide Collector's Edition. I think I'll hold on to it for a little bit. The condition's generally okay, but eventually I'll probably throw it into a fire and just sip a whiskey and think back to those heady days leading in to The Phantom Menace. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been Spotlight Star Wars here, the Force Center podcast feed. You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can audiobook on us if you'd like at audibletrial.com/Force Center. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. From there, you can access things like our Discord and have a daily conversation with the Force Center community. For me, you can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to KenNapsok.com. Thanks to all those who came out to see me perform stand-up comedy in New York City last week. More dates coming soon, San Francisco in late October. And in December, looks like I'll be heading back to Washington, D.C. So if you want to see me do some comedy, go to my website to check it all out there. Don't forget, if you'd like, I do some work over at the GPA, the Good People Association. We got a Kickstarter going. Check it out if you want to support a board game, Futility, the actual game of living, a game we've designed and want to get out to the world. But that's it. That's it this week. So for all the things in Phantom Menace that were there that we weren't just ready to take in, we'll see you next time here on Spotlight Star Wars.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.